Hello, everyone. Welcome to Parkside Today. I'm John Melke. It's a pleasure to be joined by Denise Lockwood, the owner of Racine County Eye, a news website that focuses on engaging the community in news conversations. Denise, welcome to Parkside Today.
Thank you.
So you earned your Bachelor of Science degree in journalism in 1999 from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, later a graduate certificate in advanced professional writing and communications, also from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. You have 20 years experience as a print, digital, and multimedia professional with knowledge in growing an engaged news audience. What was it about journalism that attracted you back whenever something about journalism attracted you to journalism?
Oh, wow. We're going back that far. Back in the day.
We're going to go back. Right.
I have always loved, you know, the hook of the story, right? So when I was a little whipper pumpkin head kind of snapper back in the day, and when I was 11 years old, I actually fell in love not only with journalism, but in just writing in general. Mm-hmm. I ended up going on a trip to Ireland and England when I was 11. And Shakespeare was short. I was short. Mm-hmm. He was a good writer. 11-year-old logic told me that I was going to be a halfway decent writer. So I got the bug from Shakespeare. It's all his fault.
He got the bug from Shakespeare early.
I did. And
prior to being involved with Racine County Eye, your journalism experience included covering manufacturing and education for the Business Journal in the greater Milwaukee area. You were also involved with CaledoniaPatch.com, that hyperlocal website serving the community of 20,000 adults. And you grew that audience from nothing to having an average of 30,000 unique visitors and over 1 million hits per month in just 2.5 years. How did you do that?
A lot of work. A lot of work.
A lot of work.
It was. Patch was owned by America Online at the time, and we started that news website from completely nothing. We actually worked on really engaging the audience around the news, but also in really helping to promote really strong news conversations. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was so different than my prior experiences, having worked for the Kenosha News, mm-hmm. and the Milwaukee Business Journal and all of the newspaper, because, you know, quite frankly, when you're reading a newspaper, that's a passive act. When you're reading a news website, you can bring it into that social media space and really understand the power of actually seeing what you've written, how it impacts people. Mm-hmm. And I got addicted to that part of it.
Sure.
Just as much as I really appreciated writing it, because when you see the net result of how people understand what you've written, how they internalize things, how they make meaning of things, seeing maybe some gaps in understanding, maybe, and having, now I have 50,000 editors, which makes it really fun.
That's a lot of editors.
That is a lot of editors, and they're not shy.
No, always point something out.
Well, and you know what? Quite frankly, that's the humbling part of what we get to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the piece that I really love. A lot of journalists really hate that part of it because they want the wall.
Mm.
They want the wall of not having to see, you know, what that interaction is like. And I really appreciate that, because when you have a relationship with your readers, you start looking for how can I help those people. They just aren't readers anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and that's a big shift, isn't it? That you go back
Huge.
And think about, here's the newspaper, and maybe someone wrote a letter to the editor about a particular story. And today, it's, no, they're not writing a letter to the editor. They're responding immediately and getting involved in a conversation with other readers who are responding immediately to whatever it is that you may have written.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of power to that.
Mm-hmm.
I look at those interactions as opportunities. Mm. Because not only do I get to grow as a human being and seeing the results of the writing, but also being a better writer, there also is to being able to have that personal connection with the people that I serve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge difference, because, you know, when you're at the newspaper, it's how much can I get into that news hole versus what do my people, what does the community need to understand?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big difference.
Even at the newspaper, and I, a while ago we had staff members from Kenosha News on, and we didn't really get into this a lot, but thinking that even with today's, the way information is shared, again, going back to where your option was a printed piece of paper with news and information in it, the newspaper was limited to the amount that it could put in each day, depending on how
much
advertising it sold.
Yeah.
So now even the newspapers, the larger sources, open up in the web and they can do things that they couldn't do, let's say a few decades ago, because they have that web presence, and they can put there'll be things in the Journal Times website or the Kenosha News website that we don't see in print because, well, maybe the space wasn't there, but they're still getting that information out.
Yeah, but I think one of the things that, you know, as the owner of the Racine County Eye, what I've kind of pivoted on is really that focus of solutions-based journalism.
Mm-hmm.
So my business model to read my stories to the stories that are on the Racine County Eye, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
And right. So we sell advertising, we sell sponsored columns, but we're really intentional in how we put those together. What this means to the user, though, when you're really focused on a solutions-based journalism, you're not looking at writing crime stories every single moment of the day,
mm-hmm.
because my business model, and that's a huge shift, a huge shift, is to really focus on writing stories that help my readers. And what's that institutional knowledge that I can leverage? Because I don't have the staff that a lot of other newspapers do, but what I do have is that institutional knowledge that I've accumulated over 20 years. So I'm always looking for how do we do stories and write for the audience we have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really keyed into my analytics and not just the number of people, but what are they actually interested in? So in looking at my analytics, some of my top areas of concern for my readers are employment. It's real estate. It's, residential and commercial, and really understanding what meaning making around what's going on in the community and events. But it's not just about crime. And that's one of the kind of addictive kind of things that has been happening in my industry is a lot of push towards just writing about crime because we get a lot of page views around that.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets frustrating sometimes. But on the other hand, I also have really been very intentional about how we choose what we're writing about.
Mm-hmm. I want to get back to the analytics a little bit. But before we go back there, tell me how Racine County Eye starts.
You mean as far as like the transition from Patch to Racine County Eye?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I had started the Caledonia Patch website back in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a huge year because at the end of the day, there was so many things, an upheaval in our industry. And I had gone back to the Poynter Institute for a conference. It was like a two-week conference called Standing Up for Journalism. And really, it was a boot camp of how do we retool in the era of cutting and pasting stories mm-hmm. on a newspaper to actually looking at how do we use multimedia storytelling projects, audio, how do we do really good video, things along that line. So I had to pivot in my industry, and that's why I went back to grad school up at UW-Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I'm a Panther. I don't know.
It's a UW institution,
UW, live with three other Rangers, so that vindicates me a little bit.
Yeah.
I think. But at the end of the day, I had to look at what did my industry need and where was my audience?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we have really great meaning making, because there's so many things that are going on in Racine County right now.
Yeah.
We were actually the first news website to say that Foxconn was coming to Mount Pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a lot of stories around the Oak Creek power plant because part of it, about half of it is in the village of Caledonia.
Mm-hmm.
I was literally in the houses when they were being tested, and so there was a lot of institutional knowledge around that.
Mm-hmm.
We've been able to do stories around the mental health, lack of access into what was Wheaton and now is Ascension, mm-hmm. in access to mental health care.
Yeah.
And those are the things that I've always wanted to really dig in and bring into the kind of the milieu of our community of how do we have really good conversations around these things that are impacting us daily.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started doing that with the Patch, and the Patch was owned by America Online at the time. And turns out when you don't have advertising boots on the ground, you don't sell ads.
Yeah.
And they don't let you keep writing for free.
Yeah.
So the Patch had over 900 news websites across the nation. And in 2013, it was July of 2013, there was a mass layoff of probably about half of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was unfortunately caught in that. And so it really left me with, oh my gosh, now what am I going to do? I don't want to go back to newspaper land, mm-hmm. because I don't think they have it right.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I bring out really great journalism and really start working on some of these storylines that I know are missing? Because if you look at the newsrooms, there's a lack of institutional knowledge. That is something that we need to really grow in mm-hmm. our industry.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to leave.
Okay.
And so Mr. Denise and I had a really good conversation. And I said, I really want to start my news website. And he's like, okay. And it was hard. You know, for the first year, it's still hard. We're in this to this 5 years. Over 5 years now, we've had 6.5 million page views, which I'm really proud of. We have 42,000 people, human beings, that come to the news website every month.
Wow.
And it's been really...
Individual users?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah, great.
Fantastic. It is.
I know. It's so fun.
Yeah.
But the relationships that I've been able to build have really been unique in that I don't know that I would have gotten to do what I've gotten to do if I would have been part of even an online news website.
Right.
Because
right.
they don't let you stay there long.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So you start Racine County Eye.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking a risk. A bit of a risk to do that,
mm-hmm.
right? And tell me how you start to realize that this is successful and will be successful. What were some of the things where you kind of go, oh, yeah, okay, this is going in a good direction for us?
Well, there were quite a few signs. One of the things was that a lot of the audience that we had built from Patch migrated over the Racine County Eye. So
okay.
That was a big plus, and I have to kind of give a little shout out because my friend Ralph Malicki from Piggly Wiggly, he actually literally called my former business partner and I, Heather Asiambi, who was was headed up the Mount Pleasant Sturtevant Patch, and when he had heard that we had gotten laid off, he's like, "Come on over, I have plans for you," and he literally helped us be able to kind of navigate the small business startup process.
Wow.
And we wouldn't have been able to do that if it wouldn't be for him, who
mm-hmm.
said, you know, what you're doing is really good work and we want to support you.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
let's do that. And I'm like, this is scary. You know, I have a kid in college, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like,
what, back to the analytics.
Yeah.
You can look at, as you said, unique visitors. How many people are coming to Racine County Eye in each month? What stories they're looking at? What their reaction is to different stories? How much of that influences, shapes kind of the content that goes out in Racine County Eye?
It's a substantial piece of it. But I've also balanced it because at the end of the day, if I wrote about crime all day long, I would have probably a lot bigger of not necessarily an audience, but I would have a lot more page views.
Mm.
But that's not where I want to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that we don't write about crime, but we look for trends and we look for opportunities to kind of do some bigger, kind of more meaning making. And one of the examples that I'm really proud of is the Dante Shannon shooting. Not that I'm proud about that particular storyline, but what we were able to kind of pull the narrative around, because I noticed when people, there were hundreds of people that commented on that story, and mm-hmm. it was hard to watch the comments section, and I probably banned more people that day over the course of actually several days,
mm-hmm.
Because the comments were really personal, and but it also told me something. It told me that there was a lot of pain, a lot of misunderstanding, and there was actually two storylines going on. There was trying to make meaning of what had happened to Dante, and then there was the larger narrative around the community being named at the time the fourth worst place for black people to live.
Right.
And so I really let that space kind of sit in kind of my heart a little bit. And we ended up doing a 9-part series called Black Men Speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a video-based storytelling project. And I was able to bring in a photographer by the name of Kamala Langendorf, who is in the second story of my building. She owns Verite Studios. And we did a whole series of video-based storytelling projects, but she also did the photography, which I wouldn't have been able to have done. Mm-hmm. But that body of work really opened up the conversation around what's missing from that experience of letting people talk about that pain,
mm-hmm.
And having that understanding stand,
right?
You know, of being able to relate to it,
right? What I mean, you're writing about things that matter in the community,
yeah.
And sometimes that writing may be, I'm guessing, viewed as by some as controversial.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how do you balance? And you mentioned there, you know, I there were some comments that you said, okay, you can't, we're not going to let you put that up on the site. How do you balance that kind of thing where you're writing something? And I know from a personal standpoint, when I look at the comments, I think, you know, it's pretty easy to be, I'm whatever the title is of somebody's post, right? I'm an idiot. We'll use that. There's my post. Nobody knows who I am.
Right.
I can just say whatever I want to say. And there's no, you know, kind of personal
accountability. Yeah.
How do you balance that lack of accountability in some of the comments with saying, but that's what this is about?
Well, and there's my opinion of what happened, you know, and a lot of times it's being able to stay on topic. So if your post is not on topic, that's mm-hmm. kind of the litmus for, you know, whether or not you get to stay. And if it's very personal towards the subject matter, and you're really just kind of being a jerk and really not adding to the conversation around the topic,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to pipe up.
Yeah.
And there's kind of a level of, you know, if it's you're just kind of being a stinker, I'm gonna tell you knock it off.
Yeah,
you know. But if you're justifying why it's okay to start calling people names that are inappropriate, that's my place of business is my Facebook wall. We have 20,000 people that like us on Facebook.
Right.
So I treat it as my place of business.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get to just walk into somebody's store and be rude to the other customers or other human beings. That's
right.
Not okay.
Yeah, I was wondering back when. Now we'll get into the sports world, and as Derek, my producer, knows that if I could just do interviews with sports people all the time, I'd probably want to do this. I'd probably do this every day. You know, I'd sit in here and talk to people on sports for all day long. Badgers lose to Oregon in the first round of the NCAA tournament, and I'm looking on Facebook. There's the Wisconsin men's basketball Facebook page, right? And I thought, oh, I'm going to check out. There was like, you know, I don't know how many comments, you know, a gazillion comments. And there, some of the comments are being pretty explicit about they don't believe that Greg Gard should be the coach of the Wisconsin Badgers any longer. And in fact, if the Badgers fired him like right now, that would probably make them really happy. But all of the comments, when they were negative about that particular situation, Greg Gard was not called a name. It was, here's...
You're still on topic.
He was still on topic. And as I was reading through, I thought, I wondered if someone from UW, you know, kind of monitored that to go, okay, here's somebody who's not being, they're being rude or they're being disrespectful, and you can have your opinion and be on topic and still express it in a, let's say, in a way without being as kind of a jerk about it.
Right.
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 And how much they did. When you look at the, certainly in the past, what's going on now, 2 years, I think, in July, you know, Foxconn is the,
oh, yeah,
the story of Racine County. What have been some of the things that have struck you about that, how that story has evolved from the time that maybe to, okay,
oh, we could talk about that for hours. Yeah. There's a lot. There's a lot of frustration, I think. And one of the things that I see is a really strong need for meaning making around what is a TIF district, a tax incremental financing district,
mm-hmm,
how that works. And also one of the things that was really frustrating to me as a journalist is the difference between how national media and local media were kind of taking in this information.
Hmm.
So especially with one of the stories we ended up writing, there was a series of stories a few months ago, it's like probably late January, around the whether or not Foxconn was going to build. And I'm like scratching my head thinking, have any of these human beings that are writing this story been out there? Because I go out to the Foxconn site probably every 3 to 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, and I literally get the contract bids. And
oh,
so
okay.
I have this body of knowledge, and I also monitor the WEDC conversations around some of the memos and things along that line.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Nikkei story and even the Journal Sentinel and a couple of other like Reuters, there's several layers going on that storyline. And it's not to say that any one of them isn't valid.
Mm-hmm.
But the implication of picking one and not the other and not making meaning of it was really interesting, and how people were... There's a lot of doubt of, is this really going to happen? Because Racine County in general has been very skeptical of whether or not Foxconn's really going to deliver on the goods.
Right.
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 And so knowing all of the work that had been done, I've literally mapped every single property transfer in that whole area, and I have it on my site.
Mm-hmm.
So I know we were the first news website to talk about the Kim Mahoney story with the eminent domain piece of it. And we're continuously monitoring that storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So having watched all of that, we've done stories around the houses being knocked down, the buyouts, there's literally a building out there that has an occupancy permit. And then you've got a lot of this whole, the TIF district piece of it that people, I just don't think, understand of how a TIF district works. And one of the things that it's really frustrating because in the narrative around this, the national media wasn't really talking about the construction piece of this,
mm-hmm,
but they were talking about the... How should I say this? They were talking about what the use of the building was going to be, whether or not they were going to be next gen 10 or 6.5,
right.
Or whether or not they were just going to do research and development. And this is a 22 million square foot manufacturing campus.
Right.
So when you look at the Amazon building on I-94 in Pleasant Prairie, that's a little over 1 million square feet.
Yeah.
So the building they're going to be building that they've put in literally the cement pad in that just hasn't vertically come up out of the ground yet, but it's going to be, that's 3 million square feet. So there's a lot of pieces on how that could be used. And that was the question that the national media picked up on. And that's a valid storyline, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However, it was not acknowledged and given a lot of meaning and context of what had already been done. You have $912 million of the $1.4 billion project that is either been spent or is in out on bid contract.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I monitor that permit process because that's, you follow the money. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So when those stories started coming out with that they were going to pull the plug and whether or not they were really going to be hiring people, and I think that constructive criticism is a really good conversation to have. On the other hand, there was a lot of holes in those national media stories. And so it was really interesting because people would start tagging me on the Reuters story and the Nikkei Review story and the Journal Sentinel story. And they're like, see, Denise, see how you didn't get it right? And I'm like, oh, mon frere. So I literally went out to this construction site and I videotaped it. And there were two houses left of an entire subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Kim Mahoney and Christy Hall's house. Christy's house got knocked down last week. I talked to her. She's an attorney in town.
Mm.
And one of the things that ironically hasn't kind of come out yet, but you'll get a little new news here. Christy's place of employment was 601 Lake, which also was bought out by Foxconn.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
she's kind of getting hit on two different ends.
Yeah.
Right. And so that piece of it, watching that process happen, knowing that the 120,000 square foot building had already been built and they have an occupancy permit for, those are the things that are very real that are happening out on that site.
Right.
So that's when I say that we really look at how to make meaning. It's up to you on what your opinion is of the project, but I'm going to give you reality.
Right, right. And being a longtime resident of Racine, almost lifetime resident, but there were a few little stints away for here and there.
That was just spring break, right?
spring break for 10 years. But it certainly is this project, regardless of what it eventually turns out to be. And I'm not saying that because I'm being pessimistic about it or optimistic. I'm just saying that, you know, you never know. Even when you never know sometimes.
Yes.
But the light that project has shown on southeastern Wisconsin Racine in the past 2 years has been something that, in my opinion, the area hasn't seen in decades.
Right.
As far as someone paying.
And there's a lot of skepticism because, quite frankly, we've been to the altar before in Racine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had so many projects that were promised, and we have a really, I think, I don't know how to describe it. We really have a really strong skepticism, and I think rightly so, because so many things like the Machinery Row project and Point Blue and the Porters project, they didn't happen.
Right.
And the arena didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, is this really going to happen? I think those are great questions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they're not valid questions, but there's an onus on me to make sure that I'm giving you the reality, right?
Right.
And that's one of the things that I thought, well, did the Nikkei people come to Mount Pleasant? Do they understand that there's buildings? And so I ended up talking to a guy by the name of Willie Shi, who is a Harvard professor who wrote a Forbes article. And he's a manufacturing economist.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had this really interesting discussion around this piece that he had written for Forbes. And he said that this was a state-sponsored project. And I think one of the things that's happening also is the manufacturing is in such flux, especially with electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of market-based decisions. But it's an interesting project. And, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot to it.
So we've talked about a couple stories that were certainly important to the Racine area. What are some of your other top things? And even going back to the start of Racine County, what would you say, here's my top four or five things that I've had a chance to cover as publisher of Racine County Eye?
Well, definitely the Oak Creek Power Plant, and that's a storyline that I've kind of had to. It's hard, you know. One of the problems is that I write stories and sell ads, and now that I have a sales staff, sometimes it gets a little easier. But I'm working on scaling the news website up so that we have additional reporting staff to lean heavy on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I'm really proud of in the first several years is the coverage that we were able to do on the We Energies Oak Creek Power Plant. So we were able to be in those houses when they were being tested. I literally have the reports. I have every single report, lab result of the house, the testing that was done inside those homes,
mm-hmm.
and the, you know, covering We Energy's response to that and the science around that. There were some definite interesting, you know, choices that We Energy's made that in covering that, we were really working on how do we help the reader understand what's happening to their home, their health,
mm-hmm.
their property values. We've mapped literally every single home that's been sold to We Energies, so
mm-hmm.
you really have a comprehensive understanding around what is going on.
Right.
And that was
right.
really hard because when the bluff collapsed, it was very clear to me that people were having these experiences of living around this power plant, but they weren't really talking to one another. So there was really no kind of container for what that experience was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted to give my readers.
Yeah. Yeah. What else in your top three?
We're embroiled right now in our employment. So that is a major issue, obviously. In the city of Racine, you have 11,000 people that don't have a GED.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have a really significant issue with the black mass incarceration rate.
Mm-hmm.
So we're covering these things in a very holistic way. So what that looks like, we're not just covering the pain, we're covering the solution.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in WIBIC's Growth Accelerator class, and we're really doing some heavy work around content strategy, around employment, so that we're being able to get the bottom up. What do you guys need? What is it that you're looking for to help you make better decisions in navigating the labor market? And also with regards to some other stories, that mental health story, that's the hill I'll die on. Quite frankly, when I was with the Kenosha News, I had done a 5-part series and then I got laid off and I'm like, I want to do more around this because you know, my entire career, I've been looking at criminal complaints.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to write a criminal complaint. And that's the easy journalism, right?
Yeah.
The hard journalism is, why do we keep seeing the same people?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So we had done a series of stories around working with some whistleblowers in the Wheaton. At the time, it was Wheaton. And the access issues and also the quality care. So the Department of Health Services had been notified by a number of whistleblowers that there were significant issues. And this was back in 2016. So to kind of give some perspective, the unit had gone from 52 adult inpatient beds to 16.
Mm.
And they also had lost a number of staff to actually admit people who were in mental health crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Kenosha County has no mental health hospital at all.
Right.
Okay. So when somebody who's in crisis, if you look at these two counties, you've got about 350,000 human beings. That means that only 16 people can have a really bad day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what that looks like is really difficult when they're all funneling in through the emergency room. And so we started really looking at this issue, and the Department of Health Services had the Division of Quality Assurance had issued over 46 different citations.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the ones that had that story.
Mm-hmm.
What was interesting was the after effect of that story. So literally, there were entire staff meetings held about that story, about how Denise's story wasn't credible. Which was interesting because I'm a big, huge fan of attaching all of my primary documentation in that story. So this is one of the things that I do because I want to make sure that everybody knows where I get my information, and that's when how you combat that whole fake news thing. So that's what we did. And so when that story, because I don't ever just go on whistleblowers, I want to make sure that I'm vetting that information and having somebody much more strategic and knowledgeable about that topic to vet what they're seeing is correct and accurate. So when the state had come in, I had waited for all of the responses to come through with the hospital. So the hospital knew what the problem was, had already had a corrective action attached to it. Okay. So I took that entire document and I went to Wheaton and I said, this is what I know. How do you want to respond? And I got three sentences. And I waited for three more weeks. And I think I may have gotten like two more paragraphs. And that was it. And so that was a really interesting story to have been part of, because the end of the day is the mental health access is still an issue, a huge issue. Right. And I'm seeing some pretty significant issues that will probably remain because nobody owns it, the problem.
And I would love to get into your thoughts on the solution. And so I'm going to say you are invited back.
Oh, good.
to talk about that, because I'm looking over at the time and the time. I always know that it's a great show when I look over and I can't believe
it's
that much time has passed. So Denise Lockwood, owner publisher of Racine County Eye, Denise is going to come back because she's going to talk to us about some of the solutions, some of the things that she's seen as she's worked on the mental health story in our area and others. And Denise, I appreciate you being with us today on Parkside today.
Absolutely. Thank you.